My name is Carrie Ginger and your host of the Biteable podcast, Know Better, Live Best. Today's guest is Ann Adams, the Executive Director of Holistic Management International and has been a certified educator for HMI since 1998. Listen as Ann teaches us how holistic management helps family farmers and ranchers become more prosperous, helps strengthen local economies, improves our food quality, heals our environment, fosters community ties, and preserves local culture. Know Better, Live Best is dedicated to supporting food and health literacy in people of all ages. Our mission is to cut through the misinformation surrounding food, health, and nutrition because we believe that when people know better, they can make the right choices and live their best lives. We are presented by Biteable Foods. They use blockchain and Internet of Things technology to build traceable, transparent food systems because it shouldn't take an investigative journalist to find out where food comes from. Hello, I am here with Ann Adams. Hi, Ann, how are you?
Hi, how are you, Carrie?
I'm great. So I'm really excited to speak with you. So you're the Executive Director of Holistic Management International, also known as HMI. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. I've been involved with HMI since 1996, really. I began their certified educator training program at that point. And then I began working, doing the newsletter for them, which we call In Practice, Holistic Management in Practice. And then I began working on the educational program because I have a background, my bachelor's of science in education. And so education has always been my passion. And I was very excited because we began to work with a lot of collaborators and developed some programming, which I'll talk more about later, that we got funded through the USDA and our certified educator program. We have over 60 certified educators around the world, and it's just a fantastic opportunity to have conversations and help develop the education and training for some of the most innovative people who are working in regenerative agriculture today. And so I became an educator in 1998, and I've been working with that educational program ever since. And then I became executive director about 2015 and have been enjoying with the program development that we do to help spread the word about holistic management and all the educational programming we do as well.
Oh, well, thanks for all you do, because I think it's great to get this information out there. I know we were talking beforehand about how my health journey has actually led me here to you and with soil health. And I just, like I said, it's kind of like it was mind-blowing, the information out there and what I want everyone to know. So tell us a little bit about your, or how did you develop this passion for regenerative agriculture? I always get tongue-tied on that.
Yeah, it was. It's been definitely an interesting journey. I actually have a more of a liberal arts background, but I've always been interested in agriculture. My grandfather actually grew apples in Ohio. It was Adams Apples, and my dad worked for him. And from as I began to explore agriculture, he was working very hard to let me know that that was a very bad career choice and to not go into it. And given that it was a pretty conventional operation and he spent pretty much every day spraying apple trees with pesticides, I can imagine it wasn't a very pleasant experience for him. And so I began or continued my explorations with working for a small organic produce farm in Ohio back in the early 90s. And I remember very clearly, being out on the tractor and disking a field, preparing it for planting squashes. And, I spent all this time tilling it and thinking, okay, it's going to be awesome. I'm going to stick my hand all the way in to this wonderful seed bed for the seeds. You know, so I hopped off the tractor, shoved my hand into the soil, and I almost broke my finger because the hard pan, which is what happens when that disc keeps beating the ground. So I had about a 1-inch seed bed and then a rock hard pan underneath that. And I just remember at that moment thinking, there is something really wrong with the system. I mean, here's this organic farm. It's supposed to be great. But I'm like, and the soil was just like dust. It was, I mean, it really wasn't soil. It was dirt. It was like, there was no living organism in there and it was just pulverized. And then there was hard pan. So imagine a bunch of pulverized dirt on top of a concrete pavement. And that's pretty much what was happening. Now everything else was organic. We were giving fish emulsion to the plants. But I remember then thinking something's wrong. And so when I moved out to New Mexico and I heard about this holistic management, I mean, the light bulb just went off because it was like one of the things we really try and help people learn is that we've got these ecosystem processes, which is, you know, the water cycle, the mineral cycle, the flow of energy from the sun into the plants, and the community dynamics, the community engagement and diversity, biodiversity. And how do you create agricultural systems that encourage the health of each of those processes, which all can really, you know, you can see so much at the surface level. And, you know, I looked back at what I was doing with this organic tillage, and it was like reversing. It was doing all these things that were hurting those ecosystem processes with the best of intentions, but not really understanding all the that soil health component. And so I think in the last 5 years, it's really sped up, but even before then, all this knowledge about soil health and how the microorganisms in the soil are the ones that are driving the ability of the soil to retain that moisture when it rains, to keep those nutrients and bring those nutrients up and cycle those nutrients, and to take the carbon out of the atmosphere and sequester it into the soil, and to do that also with nitrogen and all these other minerals, and then also to take the energy from the sun and create food and fiber with it. And so that learning like just really sparked my interest in regenerative agriculture. And so I've been involved for, you know, over 20 years in that movement. And I'm really excited by what I see as the increase in interest from people like you, the consumer, as well as producers who are, you know, having that same aha that I did, is like something is seriously wrong with this system, this conventional system. Even if it's organic, you know, the whole thing of tillage, and how do we start changing these practices to get all these benefits that if we take care of those microorganisms in the soil, you know, there are, you know, employees, so to speak, you know, how do we take care of them, our neighbors, then they'll help us. But as long as we're fighting nature and destroying the habitat for those microorganisms, we're just, you know, making the challenge so much greater for ourselves, and we're causing more environmental damage, and so, you know, changing that paradigm shift for me was so important that's what's made me interested in helping others understand that those processes as well, and having that paradigm shift as well.
You can just feel your passion. And it's interesting how, like you said, we're working against nature. I mean, with the soil and even with our own bodies. With you're implanted, even just for our healing, and it, you know, comes down to, it starts with the soil, with what you're talking about. And when we're working against nature, is it just as easy to work with the land the way it's intended, or do you think it's easier?
I think once people begin to make that shift, what we have found is people have way more time, way more enjoyment. You know, farming is fun again. They can bring the family in. It becomes, you know, family friendly farming. I mean, that's why people, you know, I've heard, I don't know how many stories I've heard of producers who said, you know, I was about to, you know, I poured some pesticide into the machine and it splashed up and I was in a week in recovery and I almost lost my sight, or, you know, the kids almost did something and that was their moment of like, I'm not doing this anymore. And they began to find other ways, and you know, the kids can then, I mean, you know, 3-year-olds being able to be amongst cattle because the cattle are so well managed, and they get to experience that relationship with the animals and with the land. So But I won't say it can be necessarily easy, because what's happened is the conventional system is very much prescriptive. You know, you have so many people, whether it's the fertilizer salesperson or the pesticide salesperson or potentially extension or somebody, you know, saying this is, you know, you put these chemicals on you. Farming is a chemical process. You mix these chemicals together, everything's going to be great. And so there's a nice recipe. Now, whether or not that recipe really comes to fruition the way the producer is told, the whole nother ball of wax, but there is this sense of, and then they also have, you know, they've invested tons of money in equipment and infrastructure. And so the risk is of changing it to something that they have never experienced, because their father or their grandparents or whatever have had this same experience of this is the way you farm. And so the peer pressure of staying, because it's better to fail with everyone else doing the same thing than to fail alone doing something new. I think there's a great deal of fear around the risk, and it is. It's a super risky business. I mean, any farmer or rancher that's doing what they're doing is, you know, my hat's off to them, because I don't have that level of risk capability the way they do. So I think that's part of what this educational process is, and why there's programs like the Organic Transition and groups like Organic Valley that try and have an agronomist on staff and a vet on staff, so that they can help these producers who are trying to make the transition. Because I think there is a certain amount of support. I mean, we had basically a lot of support getting into conventional, because you had all these marketers saying, here's the way to go and here's a free sample. So how do we do that? How do we support people out of that conventional system into a regenerative system? And so I think, you know, the beginning farmer programs and some of the farm bill programs like EQIP and CSP, the conservation programs and the environmental programs, where they're trying to support farmers making transitions to production systems that improve soil health, are all really important pieces of this puzzle of shifting us to a more regenerative agriculture.
Well, you brought up really good points about why it would be hard. I mean, just the risks and the time and the money and just the different people that go into making their farms work. And all farmers, I have met so many farmers, such hard workers. My father-in-law is a farmer. And like I said, it's just amazing the work they do. Their work ethic's amazing. But I also love the way you brought up being able to have children around the farms and not being nervous about what they're going to get into. And I think anytime you can have your children around something, you know you're doing something right. And anything worthwhile is going to take some time. I mean, in my life experience, if you want something done right, or you want just great outcomes, there are great challenges that come along with it. Probably more in the beginning, I would think.
Yes, there's always that steep learning curve that happens, and then it levels out. And so I think the more we can have, you know, peer-to-peer support from farmers who have made this transition. There, so that's a lot of what our programming is bringing in farmers and ranchers who have made that shift, had done some experiment, had some trial and error, and then sharing their information with others so that we can just keep spreading this shift is definitely a key piece in all of this. Farmers want to hear from their peers. They want experiential programming. So that's what we try and do, is don't tell me how to do it. Show me how to do it. You know, give me a chance to play around with this. That's how they will operate.
Mm-hmm. And when you see success as well, I know that's got to be a big motivator when you've seen someone who's
right. You know, that's why we encourage trials. You know, start a small trial. Don't bet the farm. Here's a trial. See how it works. And then, wow, that really worked. Okay, then let's do it on twice as many acres. And that's how we've seen those kind of shifts happen over time.
Yeah, those smaller steps don't seem quite as scary.
Right. And are critical pieces, you know, because you don't want to lose those things. And what we're also finding is more of these regenerative agriculture producers are getting the second, the next generation back on the farm, because we've had many stories of people who have said, you know, the mom and dad said, you know, you don't come back. There's nothing, we can't afford to hire you on. But with the regenerative agriculture, we have one family who said, bring an operation, an enterprise idea, and let's see if we can add more value to the same land base. And they had five adult children. And over the course of a number of years, each one came back with a new enterprise. And now, not only are the parents still on there, but there's five other families, all the five children and their families, all making a living off of that same land base. And they formed a limited liability partnership, and they each have their own enterprises that they're doing, but then they come together and saying, okay, well, gosh, we need a parking lot, and that parking lot will serve these several enterprises, so we're going to pay for that as a partnership, as opposed to, if it's just for that enterprise, they put the money in. And so those are the kind of succession plans that need to be made, because there's a huge number of older farmers and ranchers, and how do we create the opportunities for the next generation to get in there and begin farming and ranching, sustaining all this success going forward? Because, you know, that's a big, you know, if you're talking about sustainable, we've got to sustain this movement into the regenerative agriculture in many, many years.
So that's always a piece that comes up also, is that, yeah, that sustainability piece. And, you know, what exactly does that mean? What does that look like?
Yeah. And so what we really encourage producers to focus on is, how do you create more profit per acre rather than focus on so much production? Because it doesn't matter how much you're producing if you're losing money on every unit of production, because a sustainable business is one that is profitable enough to pay the producer a living wage and make a younger generation interested in it. Because if they see, gosh, all mom, dad do is work 12 hours a day and they're constantly in financial stress, who would want to go into that kind of field? So we have to look at models that are about profitability and allow more income to stay with the farmer rather than being spent out on inputs or the markets or whatever, you know, the commodity markets paying very little margin to the producers.
Oh, I absolutely agree. So I'm going to switch gears, well, not completely, a little bit, but on your bio, when I was reading through that, I thought this was very interesting. It states that you're the captain of an earth ship, and it was like the house made out of tires. And I'm probably going to say most of this wrong, so I'm just going to have you, I'm reading it because I don't want to get it right, because I thought it was so interesting. Tell us more about the captain of the earth ship.
Yeah, well, it was a little bit of a joke, since, you know, an earth ship is basically a tire house. So it's south facing, and so you have all these windows on the south facing side, so you get a lot of passive solar gain. And then we have photovoltaics, and we do rainwater harvesting off the roof, and have a composting toilet. So that to me, after I got done getting my education in holistic management, I had been interested in sustainable building practices. So that was another piece to me of living locally, because with an earthship, you really do have to deal with and pay attention to the seasons. You know, you get less sun in the winter, so, you know, in terms of your photovoltaics, you're paying attention to that. And you want to harvest your water as much as you can in the rainy season. And composting toilet allows you to have a local mineral cycle instead of, you can actually compost the humanure, as they call it. And so to me, it was just a natural extension of all my interest in regenerative living and living locally. And so it's been I've really enjoyed it. It's just wonderful to have 0-degree weather outside. And if it's sunny, you don't have to heat it at all, because the sun's heating up the building yourself. And, we used to burn 4 cords of wood in the house that I was living in before, and maybe half a cord now, if that, because the sun is doing all the heating. So the utility bills are pretty minimal. And that's the idea, again, of how do you use all these incredible resources that nature provides us by effective design. So whether it's a building design or an agricultural design. It's all about using the resources and remembering that in nature there is no waste. So how do we use the resources that are the quote unquote, you know, output of our living, and actually turn them into resources rather than waste? So those are kind of the things that what I also I think is also mentioned in my bio is that I also have a little herd of goats. So I have a homestead here as well. And to me, that was important to, because even though it's a small acreage, all of these ideas can be done instead of, you know, mowing, you have the animal mow, you have the animal fertilize, you know, the chickens enjoy scratching through the goat poop, and then they lay eggs. You know, so there's, again, no waste in a system that's designed that way. If I then make cheese from the goat's milk, I can take that whey and feed it back to the chickens or the guardian dog, either one. They all like it. And some of the goats even like the whey. So, again, how do you recycle all the time? Nature recycles. So how do we learn to recycle as well? And to me, that's just, and it's been great because I've seen the land respond to the grazing, improve in organic matter. I did some calculations based on the idea that science suggests that for every 1% of organic matter that you know, like if you start out 1% organic matter and you can move your soil to 2% organic matter, that each acre is now holding 20,000 gallons more than it was before, because carbon acts as a sponge for the water. So the water will soak in and stay in the soil rather than running off or evaporating, especially if you have a lot of ground cover. So, you know, in low rainfall environment like where I am here in New Mexico, you know, we get 14 inches. Well, if 80% of that is running off or evaporating, which is pretty standard in this neck of the woods, you know, then that doesn't give me actually very much rain. But if I can increase my water holding capacity in my soil, it's like I've gotten, you know, another 6 inches of rain. I haven't. I've just kept it in the soil. But that's the idea of, again, how much we can partner with nature if we pay attention to these ecosystem processes.
It's interesting to, when you're hearing you speak about, you know, the amount of waste that you're not creating, I look around at what I'm doing. And even though we're working on creating less waste, it's a work in progress. And I hear the mower outside running. You probably hear, you know, maybe a sentence. You're talking about the goats grazing. I'm like, oh, we have a lot more going across the street. But it is, I think it's just about, you know, obviously what you're doing is amazing. And it's just helping the listeners see there's little bits we can do at a time that might eventually lead to, you know, bigger amounts. Like I said, change right away. Seems kind of hard, but eventually becomes the way of life of things you can do, you know, in the city. And just hearing about your soil, I'm looking at my lawn out front and I'm like, oh, it's amazing to see what we can do. So you talked a bit about the history of holistic management, Management International's mission. Do you have anything else you wanted to add to that? Because I know it's kind of been interwoven in there.
Yeah. And actually, you know, from Holistic Management International started in 1984. Oh. And so we're heading into our 35th year here. And our mission is to educate people in regenerative agriculture for healthy lands and thriving communities. And so we see very much the connection between the agricultural producer, the communities they serve, whether it's their rural communities or the cities near them that they supply with food and fiber. And, you know, that if we don't pay attention, I mean, when you talk about food security, the need for having American farmers and ranchers, many of them serving their local communities, that is food security. And growing nutrient-dense food, as long as we are feeling like, oh, well, we'll just let China take care of our Argentina or Australia, and I'm not a conspiracy theory person, but that idea makes me nervous. You know, I mean, there was just so many vulnerabilities in a system that we currently have, our food system. And to me, and again, the ability to partner with nature is lessened on a system like that. So that I think the more we can think about how do we educate more people, get food systems that really help the producer be able to supply their communities. And so markets are a huge issue, I guess, is the point. You know, you've got this big commodity market, and right now you've got about 17 cents on every dollar, maybe, going to the producer. And so how do you create systems and systems that can scale at regional and national levels, and even to some degree international, in a way that, you know, gives them more like 80 to 90 cents on every dollar. So to me, those are some of the things that we're trying to look at in terms of our educational programming about how do we help and create healthy, thriving lands, because that's going to create healthy, thriving communities.
Well, absolutely. And what you said about eating locally, it's true. When I eat like produce from someone I know, or at least I know is in the area, and they're using practices that I can appreciate, you just feel better eating it. You know where it came from, as opposed to just going to the supermarket and you're not really sure. You're just, you know, buying something that looks decent and obviously wash it anyway. But it's I feel better as a mother giving it to my children. I feel better for my own body feeding it what I know it needs, and it responds in a great way as well. And I've even gotten into going to more of like the farmers markets, and I've spending more time having conversations as well with those farmers, and it's fun and enjoyable, and you're putting more money back in their pocket, as you said, as opposed to like the 17 cents on the dollar.
Right. And of course, you know, some people say, well, that's not a scalable model, and it is just one distribution method. And certainly there are other cooperatives that have formed in other distribution networks. And so I think we need that diversity. If you look at nature, there is diversity, and that's what allows for stability and health. And so we need the same thing in our communities in terms of diverse food system distribution opportunities. And so to me, there's I think any number of ways, and we've seen so many creative ways in terms of buyers clubs, which are probably more lucrative for the producer, because it does take a lot of time and there's a lot of risk going to a farmer's market, especially with something vulnerable like meat. I think there's lots of opportunity for lots of different levels of distribution. And I'm excited by all the different market ideas that people are coming up with to get fresh food, local food in front of a regional market, because I think that is definitely a key piece of what we need to be doing, because the food is fresher. And ideally, with a healthy soil, you're going to have a more nutrient-dense food. And so that's the other piece of it is, you know, some people say, you know, they do studies. Is local more important than organic? And it's like, well, does it have to be either or? Can't we have, and you know, when we say organic, do we mean regenerative? Because we know there are some organic practices that are better than the conventional, because at least there's the less pesticide residue. But are they actually creating soil health, which is where you have the nutrient density? And we know, you know, scientific studies have shown that there's like a 76% decrease in the nutrition of our food in the last 50 years because of all these different practices. So how do we, again, turn it and get that nutrient density back in, because we've increased the soil health as well?
Right. And you bring up great points, and I'm happy to hear how excited you are about the way things are going with production and distributing, because that is something I'm still wondering about. With the farmers markets, I feel like that's an easier place for me as a consumer to go, as I'm still learning about my community, even though I've lived here my whole life. But, you know, on my journey and caring more, it's learning more about my community and what is available to me. and what's sustainable for the farmers and what's going to make sense in the future going forward. But also with the mission, you even talk about how it's improving wildlife habits. I mean, I don't know if you want to add anything about that, but I think that's an important one to talk about as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, what we're finding is as you improve ground cover and soil health, the wildlife habitat, because so there's a lot of producers who their most valuable crop is not, say, a livestock. It may be wildlife. They may be using hunting as a key enterprise for their, so they need to make sure they have healthy wildlife numbers to do that with, because a lot of these people are obviously very strong, what we would call environmentalists. They're interested in improved environmental conditions because of their passion for wildlife. And so, for example, we had one producer down in Texas, the Birdwell Clark Ranch. They saw a 400% increase in quail numbers because of their improved grazing, which improved the wildlife habitat for those quail. Audubon has now a range, basically a birds friendly certification in a number of states, because they realize one of the grassland birds are just getting decimated. They're the ones in America that their numbers are dropping so precipitously. And so Audubon realized who's taking care of these grasslands, individual private producers, not large parks or you know, the U.S. Forest Service or other public lands. And so they developed this program where a producer would develop their grazing plans, their conservation plans, and then Audubon would help market their products as bird friendly, because that's what they're doing. And so those kind of collaborations and the realization that keeping working lands working is the best way for all of us to get all the ecosystem benefits that come from those private lands, the improved water quality that comes from that, the improved air quality, the improved wildlife habitat, the sequestration of carbon from the atmosphere. Those are all happening on private farms and ranches of regenerative agriculture producers.
Wow, just working with nature. It's amazing what can happen when you just let nature take its course and you give it the ability to do that, to help it along. It's way, I love it. I just think it's great. So kind of going into that, I mean, sometimes there can be a disconnect between cities and rural communities, but we know they're connected. So why should those who live in the city support HMI?
Yeah, I think, you know, that there are, again, more and more municipalities that are aware. If you think of a watershed as a water catchment, the water coming out of the countryside, coming in and being drunk by the cities and towns, you know, do you want clean water, or do you want water filled with pesticides and fertilizers and other things like that? So cities like New York City, the Chesapeake Bay, they're all understanding this, and they're paying their farmers and ranchers either grants or providing educational programming to help improve those farmlands around those cities, because they're well aware of the connection between these and then air quality, you know, in terms of, you got, you know, especially like El Paso, tons of brownouts that are happening because of the winds coming through on that bare ground, causing traffic accidents because people can't see, because, I mean, literally it's like the Dust Bowl down there. So any number of, and then the big piece is like, there's so much carbon being emitted by these cities that if you think about, if every dollar you spent on things you can control, like your food purchases, went to farms and ranches who are growing regeneratively raised food, the amount of carbon sequestered by those, you'd not only be getting great food, you'd be basically making your carbon emissions, net zero, because they're sequestering their carbon for you as well as growing your food. So, that to me is the cheapest, easiest, most scalable way to address the excess carbon in the atmosphere. Everybody has choices every day. Your purchasing decisions. You can't control the government, but you can control your purchasing decisions. So if you're feeling like, there's nothing I can do about climate change, I would encourage you to look at what you're doing with your purchasing decisions, because that's the reason why these people are beginning to look at regenerative agriculture, is because there's demand for these products. Farmers and ranchers grow what the market wants. And so the more that there's market demand, and of course, right now we're importing a lot of that organic food from other countries. And so the more we can look at, again, getting back to who are you wanting to support? Do you want to support an organic farm in some other country, or would you like to try and support a local farmer or rancher who's actually doing regenerative agriculture in your area?
Well, you hit on a big question, because I think a lot of people are worried about the climate change, and you just stated it pretty simply. Look at, what's important to you with your purchases, because it is what it comes down to. What do you deem as important in your life? And it's, possibly changing the way you think about things in a small
way. And figuring out what changes you can make to support those people doing that kind of work in your area.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I like what you're doing with your work at HMI. It will positively impact the cities. So is there anything else you wanted to add on that about other ways that it can impact the city?
I think, again, as I mentioned, all the different ecosystem processes or ecosystem benefits that come from the as ecosystem processes are improved. But then you just have, the open space that's out there and the land, the viewscapes, those are all, again, think of them as privately managed parks, because that's really what they are or have the potential to be, so that, you can have that local food or that regional food, that kind of food security. So, and I know there's a lot of effort on urban agriculture, which is a great piece too. But again, you've got this incredible market opportunity in a city. And so you've got all these farmers and ranchers around any given city that are the potential connection between the two. So I like to tell people, the word consumer, who can really get behind that as an identity? But if you think of yourself as a co-producer, because that's what you are co-producing good food because your purchasing dollars are creating demand for a product, and that will encourage the supply and to follow suit. So again, I just encourage people to think of themselves as co-producers in the regenerative agriculture movement.
That's a great way to put it, because the demand's out there. They're going to keep producing, and what are we going to put that demand on?
Going forward.
So I'm sure there's more than one thing or a couple things. But what's one thing that would make a big difference in the lives of regenerative farmers?
Yeah, and so I keep coming back to these markets, because that'll make a huge difference. And obviously, some of that is what we've just been talking about, but it's also certain policies that, as we see, that the more there are subsidies that are given to the main commodity crops of corn and soybeans and, wheat, those kind of programs, then it's basically encouraging people to continue with what I would say are outdated practices. And so, to be informed as a co-producer about these issues so that you can encourage policy changes as well as these individual purchasing decisions that you make, I seems to me is another huge piece. Because I think there are so many people that producers that feel there's just such a disconnect, this rural urban disconnect, and agriculture is a bad guy, and or just what is agriculture? I'm so out of touch as a city person about what happens with agriculture. That's their job. That's not my job. So the more you can learn about, I think, the regenerative agriculture movement, and that's why I would encourage you, you know, we have a lot of information about this on our website. We have a whole web page called The Regenerative Solution that, you know, you can learn about this. We have a free e-letter you can have. We have free downloads. I mean, I think there's any number of ways you can educate yourself about these issues and come and begin to see why they might be important for you.
Yeah, if you want the information, it's definitely out there.
Absolutely.
Especially the website, HMI. It's full of knowledge. So if you want to know about it, it's on there. And I encourage everyone to check that out. Especially, like I said, it's been newer to me, but I was led to you through my journey of just, you know, impacting my health and just being a better mom to my three children. And so, and I stated this earlier, knowing where my food comes from is important to me. And it's still a work in progress, obviously, as most things are. Why is it important to you?
Well, you know, I'd say much for what you have said, but, you know, for me, I think definitely, and we found most people's for their own health. But, you know, what I've come to realize is if we look at soil health, it will give us the food we need for our own health, and it will address just about every environmental issue that we are facing right now. And so it is, you know, people talk about the answer is right underneath your feet. It's there in the soil. And having seen that and witnessed that on my own place and talking to hundreds of producers, I am, you know, totally convinced that, you know, this makes a huge difference, focusing on soil health and helping, and because there's any number of ways in which you can help be a part of this solution, this regenerative solution. And so I just encourage people to look at it, because I think so many people are overwhelmed. Yeah. I mean, people talk about that there's like this overall kind of climate depression, you know, climate change depression, and, you know, people just shut down. And to me, the excitement and the hope, I mean, well, there is hope. Yeah, I've got a grandson, you know, and I'm thinking people are talking about, you know, the world as we know it by 2050, you know, be totally different. And sure, you know, where there's technological changes, but we have the answer and we can do something. And I'd really like to leave a world that is actually better, not just, well, we kind of stopped it from being an apocalypse, good luck, to, hey, isn't this incredible what the opportunities are and how you now can help continue to improve the situation here in the world. That's what I'd like to leave him.
Well, it is overwhelming, but, you know, you've opened my eyes, and just my journey it can be scary, but then speaking with people like you who are making the change, who are out there, mm-hmm. you know, turning things around, it does give you hope, and then it gets you excited about that there's, mm-hmm. there are more answers out there for us. It's not that we just don't know what to do. It's just a matter of getting everyone else on board with the change. And so it does give me a level of excitement, and hopefully through this podcast and speaking with you, more information can be out there for people. Cause I think it's lack of knowledge, you know, with a lot of,
yeah. And a lack of knowledge and a sense that I don't make a difference. Yeah. And to me, that's the hope, is you do make a difference. Everybody makes a difference. And the passion I have seen with people in this community, and by that, I mean, not just the producers, but people like you who are aware that, wow, I can make a difference. I can learn how to, this is the next generation. I'm seeing them pick up things. You know, my mom was like you know, no, she would never can because she had seen all the work her mother did. And so this idea of coming back to some of these important skills, as well as enjoying all the technological advances that we have had in the last 100 years, that it's not about putting on your hair shirt and going back and being a Luddite. It's about taking the technology and using it responsibly while you are aware that you make a difference to that environment and feel excited about that idea rather than overwhelmed by that idea.
Absolutely. And you get me excited to keep going because I feel like I've hit, you know, I hit a standstill and then I get going again. And I luckily have a very supportive husband who's probably just as excited, if not more excited about, you know, having a garden and getting out there and meeting, you know, local producers or just seeing what is out there in our community. So, you know, it's a journey worth taking, I think.
Absolutely.
So what's your vision of future agriculture?
Well, that is it's that idea, this what they call eco-agriculture, that agriculture that is improving the soil health. And I mean, you just think of this, you know, that it's mixed in with maybe, you know, trees and polycultures of plants, that, you know, you got people, you got the younger generation coming back and getting engaged. You know, hope would be that, you know, instead of, you know, we're slowly watching the average age of farmers and ranchers increase. That's been going on for years and years. And suddenly we see it starting to decrease because the younger generation is coming into and can make a living wage. And you see more families coming in and we have the rural communities coming back because people want, you know, schools and libraries. They don't want to have to travel, you know, an hour to 2 hours to get to a doctor, a store, those kind of things. And so that the rural communities become vibrant again. And, you know, we're losing rural communities at an incredible rate now. And we reverse the trend that we actually start adding agricultural land rather than losing that. And so to me, I think, you know, I hope that we don't have to wait till the 11th hour before these changes happen. And the regenerative agriculture community that I see now, and the growth in it gives me hope that we will begin to make a shift before there is some apocalyptic event.
Well, that is a beautiful vision, and I hope it goes that route too. But it's also comforting knowing that there are changes that are already starting to happen. It's not just a, you know, a wish or a dream, that you're in the process of making those changes happen, and hopefully that continues to be the case. So is there any exciting news with HMI happening this year?
Yeah, the big thing I'd like to encourage everyone to attend is we have a Regenerate conference that we host along with the Covera Coalition and the American Grass-Fed Association. We had over 700 people attend it last year, and it'll be in Albuquerque, New Mexico, November 19th through the 22nd this year. If you just Google 2019 Regenerate Conference, you will get to that link. And I hope everybody can attend because that's the kind of community you will connect with if you come to that, and you will learn lots of interesting things. And there's all sorts of people, you know, activists, just citizens, as well as agriculture producers that are coming to that event. And then again, you know, just going to our website at holisticmanagement.org, there's opportunity to connect with people there. We have a community map, so you can go see who's in your area, and then you can subscribe, a free subscription to our e-letter and or our print publication. So there's lots of ways to connect with this group and learn more.
Oh, that is awesome news. And yes, I want to second that again. The website has lots of information on it, and so I do encourage everyone to check that out. So for the listeners today, if you had one big takeaway, what would it be?
Yeah, I think I'd just like to reiterate that everybody does make a difference. And as whether you're a producer or a co-producer, you can make choices every day. One little thing that moves and partners you with nature and moves the world in the right direction.
You know, that really does speak to me a lot because you can make small choices. And another thing I do with those small choices is I speak to my boys. Well, I have a girl as well. She's not quite two yet, but you know, she hears that, I guess. But just teaching them the little things we can do and the exciting things and hopefully get them excited about it since, you know, they're obviously our future as well. And they can learn with me just at a bit of a younger age.
Absolutely. They're part of the 98%.
Absolutely.
That are the co-producer versus the 2% who are the producers. And I hope in time, maybe they'll be part of what will become 50%, that will have 50% producers and 50% co-producers as more and more people take up that role as well.
Absolutely. Well, Anne, I really, really want to thank you for coming on today because I think just the information you gave to our listeners is something that everyone needs to hear. And I'm excited for everyone to tune in or who tuned in and they can take something even just small as to make small changes in their household.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to have me on and it was great talking with you.
Great talking to you too. Have a great night.
Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. We'd like to remind our audience that the views of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of Biteable or of our staff personally. The purpose of the Biteable podcast is to encourage spirited dialogue around topics like food, nutrition, animal and human welfare, and the food system. Part of having an open and spirited dialogue is accepting that others have views that are different than ours and working to understand how their experiences have differed from our own. We encourage all listeners to do their own research on any and all topics discussed during the show. That being said, we hope you enjoyed the podcast and thanks for listening.